This week on Making Contact.
In my math class my junior year, new words were written on my desk every day, from faggot to dyke to lesbo to anything like that.
What's it like to be young and queer? Young lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth are more likely to be harassed and victims of hate crime than their straight peers. They have high dropout rates from school, and studies show that LGBT youth are more prone to depression, drug abuse, and suicide. But as more young people are coming out, both LGBT and straight youth are challenging the isolation and stigma of being gay. On this edition of Making Contact, we take a look at the hostile climate for LGBT youth, youth activism in schools, and a new radio show in Chicago for queer Latino youth. I'm Amy Pomerlo, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program seeking to create connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Robbie Kirkland sometimes felt like he was the only gay boy in Strongsville, Ohio. In 1997, he took his own life.
His suicide was Christmas break, right before he would have returned to school. And I truly believe his timing was because he did not want to return to the harassment of school.
Leslie Sadasivan says her son, Robbie, was picked on from an early age for being different. She says he was a sensitive, spiritual boy who hated sports and wanted to be a writer.
The teacher had left the classroom, and a boy started screaming at Robbie, calling him gay, faggot, queer, chasing him around the room with a pencil and attacking him. And then for this one, though, Robbie decided for whatever reason to fight back, because usually he did not fight back. And his friends, as I said, he did have friends, they pulled him away from the boy because they didn't want him to get in trouble when the teacher re-entered the room. Another incident was, he writes about being pushed down the stairs. And then there were subtle incidents such as where it looked as if he was clumsy, where people would trip him or push him. And to the teacher, of course, it appears to be clumsiness. On the school bus, there were incidents that I learned after his death where kids would call him faggot queer.
His parents took Robbie to a counselor to deal with the teasing, and he changed schools in fourth grade, but the teasing persisted. Leslie had no idea Robbie was gay until he was in eighth grade. Robbie knew in the fifth grade, and from fifth to eighth grade, he suffered in silence. But when the family got an internet connection in eighth grade, Robbie's world opened up.
He was very excited, but we didn't realize it was because there he could go to gay teen chat rooms and talk to other people that are gay, and it wasn't like this freaky thing that he couldn't deal with, you know, at school, because nobody would ever come out at school. So he went there, he found information, he found support, but as I said, you know, the danger would be that there are sexual predators posing as gay youth, and that was where the danger, and there were a few different encounters with that. And for us, what happened is he downloaded gay pornography, which he stored on our computer. And he had an elaborate story about how some man had asked him to save these pictures for him, or else he would hurt him or kill him. So, you know, to this day, I don't know if that story was true or not, but there were a few different incidents that occurred. You have to realize that there's no social outlet for a gay youth unless a school does have the Gay Straight Alliance. But even with that, a very closeted gay youth might not have the confidence to attend or to be out.
Last night I had dreams that somebody loved me. No hope, no harm, just another false alarm.
Shortly after his parents found the pornography, Robbie, desperate to find love, ran away to Chicago to meet someone from the internet. But as soon as Robbie got off the bus in Chicago, he changed his mind, scared this person might not be who he said he was. And Robbie turned himself into the police. While he was gone, Leslie, frantic with worry, searched his room for clues. What she found was even more alarming, a note from an unsuccessful suicide attempt.
It started something like, "Whatever you find, I'm not gay." And he signed himself Robbie Kirkland, the boy who told himself to shut up, pretend you're happy, and smile, or something to that effect. But anyway, his father flew to Chicago, brought him back, took him right to a counselor the same day he flew back. And I told the therapist, I said, if my son is gay, I don't want you to change him. This is the way God made him. And I just wanted to be sure we were on the same page. And, of course, he told me that he could not tell me if Robbie was gay without Robbie's permission. But a few therapy sessions, he did tell us with Robbie's permission that Robbie was gay. Of course, by this time, we were pretty sure of it, but we respected Robbie's right to come out when he wanted to with us. But anyway, so we all just rallied around him, our love, support, and acceptance, and we kept him in counseling. I gave him literature on homosexuality. I gave him resources. I gave him our gay hotline here in Cleveland. I mean, we did everything we could do to help him. We encouraged him to go to a gay youth support group, which is in Cleveland, but he wasn't ready for all of this. So we did all these different efforts to try and help him.
But it wasn't enough. Robbie hated that he was gay and dreaded going back to his Catholic boys' school. Robbie Kirkland, 14 years old in 1997, took no chances for his second suicide attempt. He took his father's gun out of a locked kitchen drawer, went to the attic, and shot himself.
He left various messages for friends and some of the teachers, especially the teachers, I think, that were very kind to him. And he wrote that he hoped he could find the peace and death that he could not find in life, and he asked us to pray for him and to remember him.
Not all queer youth resort to suicide. Certainly the majority do not. But a look at the national suicide rate for youth, which is the leading cause of death for that age group, shows that lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth are more likely to commit suicide than their straight peers. It's hard to get an accurate assessment of exactly why a young person commits suicide, says Stephen Russell, director of the 4-H Center of Youth Development at University of California, Davis, because the reasons often die with them. Studies are based on youth who've attempted suicide, but not succeeded.
We know that about 7% of young people in the United States, teenagers in the U.S., report that they have attempted suicide, and whereas about 15% of those who have same-sex feelings or attractions or relationships report having made suicide attempts, which means, given the ratio of 7 to 15, sexual minority young people are at least twice as likely than their heterosexual peers to say that they've gone so far as to attempt suicide.
Studies in the past have shown that gay boys are at highest risk for suicide. However, these studies were based on youth that self-identify as LGBT. Recent studies, which include attraction in addition to sexual identity, shows girls may be at as much risk as boys. A study last year in the American Journal of Public Health looked at the key risk factors of suicide experienced by all teens, which include depression, hopelessness, and substance abuse. Russell says these risk factors explain why sexual minority kids are at higher risk.
Because they're more depressed and more likely to be using and abusing substances, it's depression and substance use and abuse that really accounts for their increased rates of suicidal attempts and suicidal thoughts. I think that's important because it's one of the first times that we then have information about why there is the risk. I think for a long time people have said, well, they're just gay. That's why they're at risk. And I think that what that work helps us understand is that there are reasons for that risk and that the experience of depression and substance abuse may be are certainly places that we need to focus on as we think about making a difference, as we think about prevention and intervention.
Isolation and social stigma are among the major reasons why LGBT teens are more vulnerable to depression and substance abuse.
It was always a thought that I had that if I just killed myself, then things would be so much better. And it was always in the back of my head, at least, if it wasn't in the front.
18-year-old Sarah Stubner lives in Clovis, a small town in California's Central Valley, a politically conservative area.
In my math class my junior year, new words were written on my desk every day, from faggot to dyke to lesbo to anything like that.
While Sarah was out at school, at home, she hid her sexual identity. She says this double life drove her to depression.
So how did your parents find out then?
On the web, there's such thing as a live journal, and my parents read that, and it was my own personal journal online, and they found it, and they read it, and that kind of outed me to them while I was away on a trip, and I came home to find out the next day that they read it, and they found out everything, so that's how I came out. Wasn't my choice.
What happened then? I mean, they found out, you came home.
My parents gave me about a week to figure out what I wanted to do. If I stayed at their house, I would have to give up all my friends, just everything. I'd have to go to work and then come home, and that was it. Or I could move out and just be completely free. So that was my choice, and I moved out.
Michael Bohenik is counsel to the Children's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch, an organization that covers human rights issues around the world. Bohenik spent 11 months looking at violence and discrimination in schools against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth around the United States in Texas, California, Utah, Massachusetts, New York, Georgia, and Kansas. He says some kids are harassed a lot, while others are not at all. Boys tend to be the targets of physical harassment. For girls, it's sexual harassment. Comments such as, "I can make you straight," or "you just haven't been with the right boy." Gay or straight, he says the worst teasing is doled out to those that don't fit into the stereotypical norms of being masculine or feminine.
Transgender youth experience the most pervasive, most common harassment, and boys who have qualities that are often stereotypically identified with being feminine are those who are harassed the most of the boys. The girls who describe themselves as butch or who are seen as butch are the ones who are harassed more than other girls. And so really what this is about is an idea of gender norms and when people's gender identity clashes with others' perceptions of who they should be, who their gender should be, that's really what's at play here.
In Bohenik's report, Hatred in the Hallways, he found LGBT youth, like Sarah and Robbie, spend an inordinate amount of energy plotting how to get safely to and from school, how to avoid the hallways when other students are present so they can avoid slurs, leaving little energy left to learn.
Although the students are the ones, by and large, who are committing the acts of harassment, it's a direct result of the failure of teachers and administrators to intervene when they see that things are happening, of their, in many cases, willful blindness to the possibility of such instances of harassment happening, and in some cases, the participation directly of teachers or administrators.
There are few laws that protect students. Only 7 states and the District of Columbia have laws that explicitly prohibit harassment or discrimination against LGBT youth. On the federal level, laws like the Equal Access Act of 1984, originally designed to allow Bible clubs to meet in school, have paved the way for gay-straight alliances. These are school clubs where LGBT youth and their straight allies can safely gather for things like recreation, activism, or support. Since their inception in the late 1980s, gay-straight alliances have grown exponentially. There are now about 1,200 around the nation. But in some places, most notably in Salt Lake City and Orange County, there's been enormous resistance from school officials and boards, says Carolyn Laub, executive director of the Gay-Straight Alliance Network.
There were students who wanted to start a club, and in order to get that club approved, they had to go through some sort of school board approval process, and the school boards did not want to allow those clubs to exist. In Salt Lake City's case, the attorney in this, for the school district actually informed school board members that they would be in violation of the Federal Equal Access Act if they tried to shut down the Gay-Straight Alliance Club, because they'd be treating that club, they would not be treating that club equally to the other clubs. So so the school board in Salt Lake City made the controversial decision of actually banning all clubs, essentially in order to be able to ban the Gay Straight Alliance Club. And that certainly has very damaging effects on students to not be able to have any extracurricular activities. In both cases, in Salt Lake City and Orange County, students ended up suing their school district for those decisions or those threats to ban their club, and then ultimately won, and now there are Gay Straight Alliance clubs in those schools.
The climate is changing. While the majority of schools are still hostile, student movements have made a dent in challenging the structure. There are now gay proms, and students are taking same-sex dates to the traditional proms. Even in a difficult school environment, Sarah Stubner couldn't hide her feelings for her girlfriend.
We went to school together. You could just see the love on my face when I walked around, and I couldn't hide that. So I guess I just had to tell someone, and eventually one person told another person, and word gets around really fast.
And was she out as well?
Yeah, she came out just a little bit before I did, and she told me that she liked me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I like you too a lot. So we ended up going out, and that's how that came about.
More and more kids are coming out at younger ages, as early as 10, which is the age their heterosexual peers become aware of their sexuality. Since the pattern of harassment starts early on, Bohannik says elementary and middle school teachers can no longer ignore the issue. He says one of the most important things he learned while putting together Hatred in the Hallways was that students are constantly looking for little things, like a pink triangle on the bulletin board, or the teacher mentioning homosexuality in a positive light.
And these are really, really small things that tell me that a teacher doesn't have to wait for a policy to be implemented, or for the state to pass protective laws, or for the school board to approve a GSA in order to begin to do some of these really important things, like, you know, having resources available in the classroom or mentioning the issue in the context of class discussion. And I think that is something that I would really like to see individual teachers begin to do.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like a free brochure on how to make schools safer for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth, please give us a call. Our toll-free number is 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. And remember to ask for your free brochure. Radio Arte, WRTE, in Chicago, is the only full-time youth-run radio station in the country. Radio Arte is also home to a new show, Homo Frecuencia, a youth-run show for Latino lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transsexuals. It started the summer of 2002. Correspondent Noah Miller spoke with three of Homo Frecuencia's producers, 18-year-old Tanya Insueta, 20-year-old Nancy Hernandez, and 28-year-old Jorge Valdivia. They spoke with him from their storefront broadcast studio overlooking the Latino community it serves.
Se habrá a cabo un evento en el cual dos mujeres latinas por primera vez en la historia serán otorgadas por el Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame, reconocidas.
¿Y qué creen, Jorge?
And you're listening to Lesbo Frecuencia on WRTE 90.5 FM.
The Queen's English. Do you know the Queen's English? The Queen's English. Do you know the Queen's English?
Okay, es posible que quizás no entiendas el Queen's English. Pero si esto significa algo para ti,
you guys can tell that I am not a native speaker of Spanish, and I don't do it very well. So the first thing that I wanted to ask you guys for was a little bit of a vocabulary lesson. The show that you guys do is broadcast in Spanish, and its title is Homo Frecuencia. How would you translate Homo Frecuencia into English for me?
Well, it really doesn't. It's a made-up word. Homo Frecuencia is just kind of a twist on the word frequency, Homo Frequency. Uh-huh. That's pretty much it in a nutshell, Homo Frecuencia.
Tell me, what kind of voices can I hear on Homo Frecuencia? How do you identify yourselves in Spanish and English for me?
When you listen to Homo Frecuencia, the voices represent the GLBT community as best we can. So we have gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender.
Nancy and Tania, can you help me out with my Spanish there?
Sure. Uh-huh. Well, bisexual is bisexual. Lesbiana is lesbian. Is it just gay for gay?
Yeah.
You can just say gay. Homosexual, homosexual.
Transgénero.
Transvesti.
So the show is an hour long and it's once a week, and each show has a different theme?
Yeah.
Yeah. One recent one that we've talked about is on the coming out. We had various coming out stories, one from George, one from myself, and one from Alex. And we actually encourage the audience to submit any coming out stories they have.
Safo Sonido.
The segment I work on is Safo Sonido, which is I research women or lesbians who have made a difference in history.
Safo, la primera lesbiana reconocida del sexto siglo y una gran poeta griega, nació en Grecia en la isla de Lesbo.
Safo, and they're mostly writers and artists and musicians who not many people know about, and I just tell a little bit about their history and what they've done, and if they're a musician, I'll play their music afterwards. That's a segment I usually work on. Recently, I did one on Nancy Cárdenas, was one of them, which is one of the first, which was a pioneer action in the gay lesbian history in Mexico. Chavela Vargas was another one who actually came out in the Freedom movie. She was the first ranchera out lesbian ranchera singer back in Mexico, back in like in 1950s.
I mean, in terms of topics that we've covered since I've been here and what I've heard, like, I mean, there's stuff like we covered the anti-bashing march, that rally that happened in Chicago. We've done...
Now, when was that?
That was on November 3rd, I think.
We've covered that. We've covered... we've done special editions where we're focusing specifically on lesbian issues, and that's Lesbo Frecuencia, a special edition of Homo Frecuencia.
You're listening to Lesbo Frecuencia.
We're going to do AIDS and
STDs
awareness
for World Day.
We're going to do a special on Homo Frecuentes en la Música, which is basically just, you know, we're going to focus on entertainment, on music, and the music industry, and the gay icons that are out there, whether they be gay or not.
Pretty much the only queer people that you're likely to hear on the air or see on the air are people like maybe Will from Will and Grace,
right.
Or the folks from Queer as Folk. How much do you identify with those characters? I mean, after all, you are some of the only other queer voices on the air in Chicago that people are likely to hear.
I don't at all. Like, I mean, I think it's a completely different point of view. It's a different experience that we're coming from. I mean, first of all, we're not white. Second, we don't have like a lot of money. Third, I don't know. We know
we're not male.
We're not male.
We're
right.
Not gay.
And it's a lot of like, I think it's a lot of differences. They have such a stereotypical character because they want to target a mainstream audience. And I think that the people we're trying to target here are people who have questions, who are interested, who, you know, not so much, oh, let's entertain, but like, let's inform, let's be an outlet for the community.
And did you get into the show because you wanted to help out people with their questions like that?
Basically, because of resource for Latinos. You know what we wanted to do is because when we came out, this wasn't available to us. None of this. Anything that's now wasn't available 5 years ago. So that was one of the main reasons, because we wanted the community to be informed.
Proyecto Vida tiene un programa de discusión y soporte para jóvenes gay, bisexuales y transgéneros latinos de 15 a 25 años.
When you're Latino, you can't, it's almost difficult to be both. You're either gay or Latino, but for you to retain your cultural identity is somewhat difficult. And if you look at the media and different programs that are out there, you can see why, because we're not being represented. And even when you talk about different services that are offered within the GLBT community, they're not located in communities of color. The South Side of Chicago is known for being predominantly Latino and African American. The North Side is predominantly white. And so a lot of people, when they come out, the first thing they want to do is move to the North Side.
Right. Chicago is actually, unfortunately, a very segregated city. there's a division. There's like the north, south, west side.
Mm-hmm.
There are many resources. And in the north side, there's Halsted Street, which is like the predominantly gay neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
which is Boys Town. And then there's Andersonville, which is the predominantly lesbian mm-hmm. neighborhood. And the north, south side, there, nobody really knows what's going on in the south side.
Yeah. What we're trying to do, one of the topics that we're going to be doing is finding the GLBT representation throughout different neighborhoods. And Tanya is actually in charge of that one. It's called Omo Chicago.
Tanya, tell us more about that.
I actually don't know because I just found out I was in charge of this.
Well, it's the
surprise.
And so, so what we're trying to do is with the program is we, you know, one of our goals is to say it's okay for you to say that you're Latino and that you're gay, and it's okay because there are other people like you out there.
Has it changed anything for you in your own lives to be on this show?
Actually,
definitely. Do you want to go?
Well, I just recently came out to my parents because of the show, because it was getting so much publicity. It was aired in a local Spanish television newscast, and as the majority of Mexicans watch this newscast, and I came out to them about a week before it aired. So this was like about maybe 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago that I came out to them.
Congratulations. We should throw you a party. Jorge Valdivia, Tania Unzueta, and Nancy Hernandez, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was Noah Miller speaking with the producers of Homo Frequencia, which you can hear outside of Chicago at www.radioarte.org. That's radioarte.org. Noah Miller is an independent producer and the director of the Out Loud Queer Youth Radio Project. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact, Queer as Youth. Thanks for listening. If you'd like a free brochure on how to make schools safer for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth, and a resource list of LGBT youth organizations, our toll-free number is 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. And remember to ask for your resource materials. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. That's radioproject.org. Special thanks to Kristen Zimmerman for research assistance, and to parents and friends of lesbians and gays, PFLAG, for resource information. Thanks also to Gabby Clayton, Lyric Youth Hotline, Ellen Horn, and Donovan Watts. Laura Lavati is our acting executive director, Peggy Law founding director, managing producer Philip Babbage, women's desk director Lisa Redman, senior advisor Norman Solomon, national producer David Barsamian, administrative coordinator Rosalyn Fay, executive assistant Susanna Hines, and I'm your host and associate producer Amy Pomerlow. Making Contact is an independent production. We're committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you have suggestions for future programs, we'd like to hear from you. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Until next time,